This is module, yeah, welcome to CC01, module 5. But I'll just handle the question. What about the labs of module 3 and module 4? You can't use a cable tester, so tough, you're not doing them. No, seriously, we're going to record them, and you can listen to what we do with the cable tester. Don't forget to get the cable testers on Thursday. Okay. The cable testers on Thursday. Cable testers. We're actually going to record the labs, and you will hear what it sounds like to use a cable tester, and we'll get Ian to read off the numbers, or we might get Sue to sound off the numbers because she sounds nicer. We will show you what the cable testers do.
We could have a singing cable tester. Ian said, no, we can't. Oh, what a shame.
Well, we'll get Geraldine going, it's easy as 3DB. Anyway, we'll record certainly those labs. We will show you what they're like. But the fact is that you only need to understand what the values mean. Somebody else will be reading the cable tester for you. You'll get somebody like the tea lady, and you'll press the button, and she'll go, "Oh, I think it's about -7." And you'll have to know what -7 is. Your tea lady may not sound like that, by the way. Okay. We'll see what we can do. The other thing you'll all be happy to know is I will be working on putting up the answers finally to those exams today. Ooh, I know you've all been waiting for them. And we'll have a special code word that you put in, a bit like, I don't know, Jeopardy or something. And you'll be able to get the specific module test down and look at what the answers were. So hopefully that'll happen today, if we're lucky. Now, right. Back in... Okay. Yeah, I've noticed that some of the students have provided me with the labs of 1.1.6 and stuff, and well done to Ibran, who's done very well, and I've emailed him back about that, and Philip's done okay, and I've emailed him back about that, and Eddie went off and researched the meaning of life, the universe and everything, which was excellent, but he's basically made me redundant for about the next 6 modules. Thank you, Eddie. That's all right though too. He's told me what IP addresses are and subnet masks and ARP requests and hardware MAC addresses, and I feel a bit redundant now. So if you want to do the lecture, Eddie, feel free. But very well researched, and if you do have any questions on that, feel free to give me a Skype at some point. Okay, but I should be seeing more of those labs at some point, which I'm sure I'll see an absolute deluge of over Easter, won't I? Actually, I'll be in Brisbane, so I'll look at them after Easter. Module 5. We cover a few things here. LAN is a local area network, obviously small geographic area, and it's a relatively sort of within a building and stuff. A wide area network, which is often done over large distances, for example, Birmingham to Gadsden. A metropolitan area network, they're the ones that are done in the city. This should all be ringing bells from Module 2. A personal area network is a network that is usually located within a small distance, say for example 10 metres for Bluetooth. There are of course Bluetooth dongles that go up to 100 metres, but they violate all the standards and don't work well through brick walls anyway.
Can I suggest something there too, just to the students, that you will need to know those distances and that for your exams? You'll get questions on it.
You will. So you'll need to know that a personal area network is within 10 metres and that a metropolitan area is within a metropolitan area, obviously, or a city or a town or whatever. So, okay. Now, this is something I always have trouble with, and you've sort of got to know what they look like, the pictures. And I think they're all described, essentially. And it talks about here what the pictures look like. So you've got token ring is represented by a circle. FDDI is represented by two concentric circles. That is one circle inside the other, both sharing a common center, if my mathematical definition is correct. And the Ethernet symbol is represented by a straight line. Serial connections are represented by a lightning bolt. And that's what they look like. Networking media. Okay. Intel, there was a couple of... Okay, networking media is considered layer one. Okay? Anybody tell me what layer one is?
Something else I'll have to know, isn't it?
Can I look at my notes?
You guys... You can,
you mean
but
application?
Physical. No, the other end of the physical. Well done,
physical, sorry.
That's all right. You've got to know those guys. I should be able to say layer five, and you'll go, session. I say layer six, you go, presentation. You've really got to know those layers. I know it'll... Well, I could go through... Shall I go back through, please do not throw sausage pizza away just for the revision of the thing?
Please.
Okay, please. P, please, is the physical layer.
Yeah.
P being for physical. D is the data link layer, which is layer two. The physical layer concerns itself with cables and voltages and things. The data link layer concerns itself with framing and things like... So you've got your... And there's actually a question in the final exam... where you've got to get data frame packets, segments and bits all in the right order. And I'm warning you that is in the final exam and it's in the practice final too. So you've got to get data frames, packets, segments and bits all in the right order as to which way they'd go on the OSI reference model. Okay, N is the network layer, and it concerns itself with the addressing of hosts and things and end-to-end connectivity. The transport layer, which is T for throw, concerns itself with sequencing and error correction and detection. Session layer is responsible for opening and closing sessions on a network. For example, if you open a telnet session onto TCP/IP, which is not quite the same, but it opens a session and keeps that session open. Presentation is concerned with, how good the pizza looks, but presentation is concerned with character set conversion, and the application layer is the layer to which the applications talk. And it concerns with how you talk to the various applications. Please do not throw sausage pizza away. Now, I realise you guys are all vision impaired and printing it on the toilet door is not going to help you memorise it, so you'll have to find some other way of remembering physical, data link, network, transport, session, presentation and application. The only reason I know it is because I've said it lots. Oh, okay, so Geraldine's got a little song that you could remember that with. Is that where we go? Let's get physical... No, okay, good.
Please don't throw sausage pizza away or you'll be in strife.
Okay. So that's one way of remembering it, or one way of suppressing it, as the case may be. Now, the reason the OSI reference layer is so important, and we've digressed a bit here, is because it allows us to compare different protocols. And it also allows you to sort of wander around the server room and go, I think we're having a problem with layer 3 connectivity, and sound really clever and smart when it probably might be something completely different. But it's part of the jargon. Okay. Any questions on the OSI reference model? It's all nasty stuff back in Chapter 2, but it's going to come back and bite you.
I've been spending my Friday morning studying it.
It will eventually sort of stick in there and you'll remember what all the layers are stuff.
Yeah, for sure. It's sort of like starting to already.
Yeah, exactly. It's a bit like learning the different numbers of accidentals for musical key signatures. If you're using it, you tend to know what they are, and you get to go into things like Five Boys Eating a Duck Going Cold and Fat Child, We Got Drunk After Every Beer. We're just, please don't throw sausage pizza away. It's just a different thing. The other way you can do it is if you do it the thing the other way, it's all people seem to need data processing, which I don't think is as fun as throwing sausage pizza. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, yes, we'll just type that into the chat window. Well done, Sue. Okay, Ethernet, the digital Intel Xerox standard, and it came out in 1980. Lots of things happened in 1980, and we're not going to talk about any of them. 10 base 2, 10 base 5, 10 base T, well, that wasn't out in 1980, and 10 base F, which is fiber. 802.3 range of standards, and you'll see this on a lot of switch boxes supports 802.3, and you'll go, wow, what's that? Well, now you know. It's the Ethernet standard that most devices and things use. Okay, specifications. 410 megabits per second Ethernet networks. And everybody thought that was pretty cool. But a lot of the networking stuff didn't interoperate with each other because you had the 802.3 frame standard and you had the Ethernet 2 frame standard, and there are differences between those standards, which we will cover, I believe, in Chapter 6. And we now have 802.3Z, which is the speed, the specifications for gigabit Ethernet, which obviously came out significantly after 1980. Okay. They basically say in these notes that 100 megabits per second is good for workstations and things, and if you want to connect servers and stuff together on the network backbone, you might want gigabit if you want increased connectivity speeds. Some people would say that running gigabit to the desktop is completely wasteful. That's okay, they haven't been to my house lately. No, seriously, you can actually get away with basically 100 megabit to the desktop, and then you use gigabit and stuff for the servers. There is 10 gigabit Ethernet, but it's not yet in widespread usage. Can anybody tell me approximately how fast 100 megabit Ethernet can transfer data? In megabytes per second.
Ten?
Yes, that is correct. It's approximately 10 megabytes per second. And the notes go through very... it basically works at... Well, it's actually... you basically divide 100 megabits by 8. And that gives it to you in megabytes. So it's a little bit over 10. Well, it's actually 12.5, I think. 12.5 megabytes per second. It's the same as all that bandwidth calculations I sent out to the list earlier this week. And I haven't got any answers for those yet, so I'm still waiting on those as well.
It's sitting in my draft box.
Ah, fair enough. No, I realise I'll probably get them all in a big rush. But, yeah, we divide the... 100 megabits by, we multiply it by, do we divide it by? We divide it by 8. Yeah, you divide it by 8, and that gives you 12.5 megabytes per second. So there you go.
On that point of worksheets and labs too, I guess it's good to reiterate that we would rather not have them all in one big heap at the end. So if you can keep them coming, that's good.
Yes, and I'd almost go as far as saying if we do get them all in one big bunch at the end, we'll actually be more likely to be careless at marking them because we'll be so worn out from all of them. So please do send them in as you go along. We don't want to mark them all at the end.
Do you want them as we go along or as we do them chapter by chapter? Like, I'm halfway through a few from 2 and a couple from 1 here and there and 1 from 3 and that sort of stuff.
Well, you can send them in as you've done them if you want them marked as soon as you send them in. And the other thing to keep in mind, and I'll just reiterate that, is that all students should hang on to their completed worksheets. In the event of a disk crash, I should be able to say any student give me your lab work for CCNA or give me your lab work for ITE and it will turn up in a zip in my inbox. That's very important. I will try my best to maintain your data, but it's your hard work and not mine.
I actually have two versions
goes for ITE too.
Of all of those.
Yep, no problem. So we'll, that's just, and as part of CCNA 2, you'll be required to keep a lab book, and that lab book is for you, and it's also for me to mark, so we want that information kept so that I can say, submit your lab book, and you can send it to me at the end of lecture. Yeah. We talk about different sorts of media basically here. 10Base 2 is 50 ohm coaxial cable, usually with BNC connectors and T-pieces, and it has a maximum length of 185 metres, which is in your test, if I remember correctly. Thin net will go to a maximum length of 185 metres or 606 feet.
Aren't we kind to them?
We are. The topology is a bus topology. Can anybody tell me what is wrong with a bus topology? Is there anybody out there?
Yes, but I don't know the answer to your question.
You have to rely on a central central networking device?
Once the connection gets destroyed, it affects the entire system.
Yeah, essentially what happens is if you get a break in the cable, or you take a terminator off the end or something, you bring the whole network down. This sort of indicates to me that we should possibly go back over topology again. Does anybody remember what I said about topology a couple of weeks ago? Or are we all in shock? Oh, I think I might be gearing up for a revision lecture next week, people. Okay. So a bus, linear bus topology, all of the things are connected in a... This is revision, people, and it will help you in your test. Here we go. Linear bus, it's a big long bus, it's one big long cable, it's got terminators at either end of it. If you get a break in the cable, it's all going to go down like stuff that goes down. Okay. Now we'll get onto 10Base 5 cable, which is... The media is a 50 ohm coaxial cable, except it's thick net as opposed to thin net, and the maximum length is 300 metres or 1,000... I would have thought it was 500 metres, but this 300. That's a bit strange. 1,508 feet. And it topology is a bus, so we're still talking about buses. You attach the units with AUIs, which are attachment unit interfaces, and they screw into the coax, and it's actually called a vampire tap. So 10Base T, and 10Base T, the media is category 3, 4, or 5, unshielded twisted pair, two pairs. Maximum length 100 metres, 328 feet. None of this uses token passing technique at all. And the topology is a star. Okay, so let's revisit topologies. Your linear bus topology is a big long run of cable with T-pieces and terminators at either end. The signal travels up and down that cable, and the terminator is used to cancel out the echo that would come back from the end of the cable if the terminator was not there. A star topology is where you have one central device, such as a hub, and all computers connect into that with separate cables. An extended star is where you hook multiple hubs together and the computers hook into the hubs or switches, and that's why you have extended stars, because you've got the stars connected together by cabling. A ring topology is where if you have three computers, computer 1 connects to computer 2, computer 2 connects to computer 3, and computer 3 connects to computer 1. You can visualize that snake thing that's where its mouth eats its tail or something. There's a snake thing that sort of goes in a ring. That's sort of like a ring topology. I can't remember where I saw that or I'd cited
a reference
for
that.
No, that's in the game of snake. I'm talking about there's a symbol of a snake eating its tail to show that things go on and on forever and round and round. Unlike Gemma's games of snakes that don't go forever because she ends up eating the other end of the snake and she dies. Okay. The ring topology, you've got computer 1 connected to computer 2, computer 2 connected to computer 3, computer 3 connected to computer 1. Token ring uses a ring topology, and the token is passed around the ring from computer to computer, and if you get a break in the ring, you are in trouble. However, there is a dual ring system that will actually allow two tokens to travel one in each direction, and if the ring breaks, it can actually figure out where the break is and it can work around that. We don't really talk about token ring because you get to talk about MAUIs and all sorts of things. Okay, the mesh topology is where every computer connects to every other computer, a bit like chicken wire. And that will allow you maximum reliability, and the example cited in the notes is a nuclear power station would have a mesh topology with its control systems in case something failed. I'm sorry to say this, people, you must know all the topologies. Bus, ring, star, extended star, and what was the other one?
Hybrid.
Mesh.
We don't really cover the hybrid, Dean. That's where you mix up multiple topologies. I've never seen a question on hybrid in the tests.
I just remembered it from the notes from last year.
Yeah. Hybrid is where you mix up the multiple topologies and you hook them together with various devices, but we don't do a lot with that.
So what's the last one after extended star?
The one after extended star was mesh. Now, there we go. So Sue's typed that into chat for you all. I realise that CCNA is a lot of learning. CCNA 1 is not very interesting. It's a lot of learning. And if you need to ask questions, you can ask questions and we'll tell you. And we'll probably refer you back to the notes because that's the sort of person I am. But we'll refer you back to the bit that you want. There's a lot of rote learning in CCNA. There's a lot of rote learning in ITE 1. Once we get into CCNA 2 and ITE 2, there's a lot more practical lab stuff. And you really get to mess around with the routers and things. And that's when things start getting interesting. But unless you understand this base level networking stuff, by the time you get to CCNA 2, you'll be mightily confused. So it's very important that...
What about the tree? The cache?
No, there isn't a tree topology that I know of. Ah, the hierarchical, right. Don't think I've got that in my notes here. Yeah, I'd have to look that one back up. Hierarchical is certainly out there, but it's not in common usage, so I'd have to refer myself back to the notes and have a look at that one. Okay. And we continue to go through a lot more things. For example, 100 base FX, which is 62.5/125 multimode fiber, maximum length 400 meters or 1312 feet. You don't need to know all of these numbers as such. You need to know approximately what they are and where to look them up. A lot of the tricks of networking is to be able to get your hands on the information quickly, not necessarily be a freak like me and know a lot of it. Okay. The topology is a star. The attachment is 100 base CX. And, oh no, it's not. Let me scroll back. I'm just making it up now. Topology star. Oh yeah, 100,000 base CX is the attachment. Okay. Now, the best place for all of this information is the diagram descriptions that our volunteers have painstakingly put together. And if you're not looking at the diagram descriptions whilst you are reading the modules, you are missing out big time. So have a Word document open in one window and your module notes open in the other, because there's an incredible amount of descriptions in those diagram descriptions. And I actually originally did this course without the diagram descriptions, as did Gemma, and we learned all sorts of things by reading the diagram descriptions that were typed up. Okie dokies. Any questions before we continue?
Just having a look at them now.
Sorry?
I'm just trying to find them. Oh yeah, I found some ones here for five.
Yeah, okay. Guys, the diagram descriptions are on www.qcat.org under Student Resources, CCNA 1, Module Diagram Descriptions. I really can't stress enough, look through those indexes. There's gold in those damn there pages.
I have one in front of me.
Yes, yes, so they're in the Module Diagram Descriptions. Look, we can call the directories gobbledy-wobbledy-gook if you think it would make it more confusing. But Module Diagram Descriptions on qcat.org under Student Resources, CCNA1, Module Diagram Descriptions. And the ones for the exams are under Exam Diagram Descriptions. And if you haven't been looking at those diagram descriptions... Yep, that's right. And if you haven't been looking at those, you are... That's exactly right. The pictorial descriptions will make the module notes much clearer. You've really got to spend an afternoon cruising around qcat.org. It's where all qcats hang out, okay? So really have a cruise around qcat.org. It's well worth digging around and seeing what you can find. And it's a good way to practice your browser skills as well. Okay. Any other questions? Okay, silence is golden, so on we go. There are some network cards that have an interface which has a 15-pin attachment, unit interface, or AUI. Although if you've got cards that have got an AUI interface, then they're obviously pretty old. Some of my old Cisco 2500 series routers have got them. And you can attach a transceiver onto that connector that will actually communicate with the media you wish to connect it to. So you can have AUI interface to twisted pair, AUI interface to 10Base2, or AUI interface to 10Base5, or AUI interface to fiber. Okay. The other thing that it tells us here is the letters RJ stand for registered jack, and 45 is the one that we use on category 3, 4 and 5 twisted pair cabling, and it's one that looks like a big phone connector. The smaller jacks that you usually use to connect your phones, it's an RJ11 is the small one, and an RJ12 is the slightly bigger one, and RJ45 is the really big one. Okay, the other thing they're telling us here is that there are eight wires in the RJ45 connector, T1 through T4, which are the tip, and R1 through R4, which are the ring. The T wires carry the tip, and the R wires are the ground wires, and they carry the ring. And that's the positive and negative wires in the pair. So you've got T1, R1, T2, R2, T3, R3, and T4, R4. Okie dokie, so we're going to revisit straight through cables. Well, that is where the pins on one end are wired straight through to the pins on the other end. One is wired to 1, 2 is to 2, 3 is to 3, 4 is to 4, 5 is to 5, 6 is to 6, 7 is to 7, and 8 is to 8. Also keep in mind that there is a special... there is a special colour sequence that you must observe for the UTP 568A and B wiring. And if you have an A to B cable, you actually have a crossover, which is where pins 1 and 2 are wired to pins 3 and 6. 3 and 6 are wired to 1 and 2. 4 and 5 are wired to 4 and 5. And 7 and 8 are wired to 7 and 8. 1 and 2 and 3 and 6 are crossed over. A rollover cable, which is a serial cable used to connect Cisco routers to computers via RS-232C serial ports, pins 1 through 8 on one end are wired from pins 8 through 1 on the other end of the cable. So 1 is to 8, 2 is to 7, 3 is to 6, 4 is to... and so on. In other words, the cable has been rolled over and the little one fell out. Okay, just to get that out of the way. Straight through cables are used to connect PCs to switches. Crossover cables are used to connect PCs to PCs or switches to switches. That will come up in your test. Which cable do you use to connect different devices together? Okie dokie. Straight through cables for the following: switch to router, switch to PC or server, hub to PC or server. Okay, that's what you use straight through for. Crossovers we are using for, we use those for connecting switches, so if you're cascading your switches, you'd use crossover cables. Switch to hub, hub to hub, router to router, PC to PC, or a router to a PC, because the router actually has them flicked over. Okay, so rollover cables are used for serial connections to Cisco routers, which you'll become intimately familiar with in CCNA 2. Okay, let's do some revision. Can anybody tell me what a repeater does?
Repeats or strengthens the signal.
It does, and it usually regenerates it in the analog domain. And it's used for extending cable lengths. And in fact, this brings in an interesting rule that we talk about in Module 6 called the 3-4-5 rule. Three repeaters, four segments, and five endpoints. I think I'll have to look that up when it comes up in our notes, but we will deal with the 3-4-5 rule. Here we go. You can have populated segments and unpopulated segments. So you can have user segments, have user systems connected to them, and link segments are used to connect the network repeaters. Now, one of the problems with this is that Ethernet requires that you send a signal out and it's going to reach all of the stations in a LAN within a particular time period. If this does not happen, you cannot detect a collision, and we will talk about collisions extensively when we cover CSMA CD. If you've got too much latency on the LAN, you can have all sorts of problems and late collisions which aren't detected by things. So that is your repeater. Can anybody tell me what a bridge does?
Goes over the water.
They can type into chat if they want to. I wasn't even paying attention. Somebody made a joke about a bridge.
You said, what does the bridge do? And I said, it goes over the water.
Fair enough. Geraldine says, a bridge goes over the water.
Aren't you going to give us a song
over
about
it? Over troubled water.
Ben has materialised.
Yes, I arrived about 10 minutes ago in the dust and heat of having walked back from one bus stop too far.
You should be using Lodestone GPS and you wouldn't have that problem.
Too different.
Or too light.
Okay. A bridge is usually designed to either convert between two different media formats or it's designed to separate the network, and it actually uses the 802.1 spanning tree protocol, and it learns which machines are on which side of the bridge, and it only sends things across the bridge that need to go across the bridge. In fact, we'll be sending Geraldine across the bridge and not letting her come back. No, just kidding. And then we'll start singing London Bridge is Falling Down.
Falling down.
Okay, so, can anybody tell me what a hub is? What's special about a hub?
It's on a car.
It repeats the signal to all computers on the port.
It does repeat the signal to all computers on the particular LAN, except for the one that sent the signal out initially. That's important. So you only get 4 out of 5 for that one, Mr. Legg, but well done. And they're usually passive.
Considering I've just arrived, I think I'm doing okay.
Yes, well, drink more coffee and you'll do even better. Okay, can anybody tell me what a switch does? Talking about a network switch, not a light switch. Yeah.
It particularly routes the packet to the particular destination.
And it does that by doing what? Like, what does it use to do that? And somebody else can answer that if they like.
It looks at the MAC address of the packet and sends it only on the appropriate port to the computer that has that MAC address.
It does indeed. And it uses a CAM table. And it figures out which machines exist on which ports, and it sends the packets to those individual ports. And it does what we call micro-segmentation of the network, which is a big funky word for it opens a segment between the two particular machines that need to communicate. And it does this by, and it also increases network efficiency. And there are 3 types of switches, but I don't know whether we talk about them in this lecture, so I won't yet. Yeah, I know what the 3 types are, I just wasn't sure whether I'm supposed to be talking about them in this lecture. Sorry? Oh. Yeah, all right, well, I'll mention it. That's quite disturbing. He doesn't pay any attention to me for the 3/4 of the lecture, and then he comes in with a quite relevant comment with no warning whatsoever. So our fearless leader has come to the party here. We're now going to talk about switches. He likes switches, okay? We wish we could turn him off, no. Now... that's right.
Geraldine singing will turn anybody off.
Yeah, Geraldine singing will turn anybody
that's
off.
That's an immediate failure.
That's it. Someone's gone and done it now.
All right. There are 3 types of switches. There are store and forward switches, cut-through switches, and fragment-free switching. Now, a store and forward switch, which is most of your cheapy switches, derogatory here, so we'll just call them cheapy switches. They're the ones that you get, you know, $25 or whatever your favourite currency is for an 8-port switch. They collect an entire packet and they then resend it out to the appropriate port. Can anybody tell me one of the disadvantages of this style of switching is? And not Ian, because he's doing haptics with Craig.
That's why I'll never make comments.
No, the disadvantage is not a jam. I like jam, actually. What's the disadvantage of store and forward switching? What does it do to your network?
Would it slow it down?
It does. It introduces latency, which is one of those funky words for things going slow. It's like when you poke Gemma in the side and you go, wake up, and about 10 seconds later you get, ugh. Okay? That's latency.
And then you do that repeatedly for the next 2 hours.
That's exactly right. So, yeah, you need a... Anyway, so latency. So it slows your network down. But one of the advantages is that it only forwards on packets that have a correct cyclic redundancy checksum. That's right, she's in the middle of a lecture, which is why she's talking quietly at you. Okay, and cut-through switching is where you get enough of the packet to know where its source and destination MAC addresses are, and then as soon as you actually have those packets, you cut it through to a specific port, and that's why it's called cut-through switching. Fragment 3. Can you refresh my memory?
Reads in the first, the destination address.
Yeah. Yeah.
Make sure the header is correct, and then it will send.
Okay. And fragment 3 reads in up to the destination MAC address and checks the CRC of the header and then forwards it through if that is correct. So there we go. We've talked about the three types of switches. Which order did I go in? Store and forward. Fragment 3. Cut through. Yeah, I did cut through a second, didn't I? It's the one that cuts the packet straight through as soon as it knows their destination. It's very quick. And a lot of the high-end Cisco switches are cut-through switches. I remember back in 1994, this is one of those how old am I stories, where the first networking device I ever got my hands on for twisted pair networking, actually it was about 1997, was an 8-port hub. And one of the advantages of hubs is that you can see all of the traffic appearing on a particular segment because they don't filter any of it out. It's very good for playing with a network sniffer. And that's a device that looks at packets that travel on the wire. And it wasn't until 1999 that I actually paid $143.50 for two 5-port 100 megabit D-Link switches. Which eventually blew up, but that's okay. Obviously, as you can imagine, the prices of switches have come down. Integrated circuits for performing switches and stuff have become quite cheap. And in fact, most home routers and modems, if they're multi-port, have a switch in them. Has anyone here not seen a network switch? It's all right. We're not going to mark you down if you haven't seen a switch. But I'd say most people would have seen them.
Yes, I've seen one. Or three or five.
Okay, I'm just scrolling down through the rest of my notes here.
We can show you one tonight, Geordie.
And Craig's phone's ringing. A switch is smart, a hub is not. A hub reflects it out to all machines regardless of destination. A switch reflects it out to the port once it knows the topology that the packet needs to go to. A switch microsegments the network. In other words, once it knows where machines are located using its CAM table, it only sends packets to the destination port, not to all the other ports.
How long would it take to, like a little Shorecom switch or something, how long would that take to sort of ascertain all that information? Like from the time you like turn it all on power up your network, etc.
I thought somebody was standing next to me for some reason. I just noticed somebody in proximity, I was just wondering what was going on. It takes seconds. As soon as you send a packet from one machine to another, the first time the packet gets sent, it gets broadcast out every switch port. It then watches to see which packet, which port the receive comes back on. So it says, I'm sending a packet to MAC address 123456, and it sends it out every port, and then it, MAC address 123456 responds on port 7, so the switch goes, 123456 is on port 7. The next time a packet goes to MAC address 123456, the Shorecom only sends the packet out to port 7. So, assumedly, if you get a packet that goes to every machine within, say, the first 10 seconds of power-up, it will know the network topology within 10 seconds of power-up.
Excellent. Thanks for that.
The other thing to keep in mind is switches in boxes are usually quoted as having a certain amount of memory, and they also are responsible for containing a certain number of MAC addresses. If you exceed that number of MAC addresses, the switch will start forgetting where machines live and will become less efficient.
I have another silly question, actually.
Yeah, by all means.
Okay, this particular switch I'm thinking about is under a friend's computer desk that when she gets annoyed, she'll unplug stuff and rearrange things. And what happens if you say, oh, I'm unplugging stuff to get that rat's nest out from under my desk, and then you sort of put it all back and plug the various computers into different ports? What happens then?
Basically what happens is that the table information is invalidated after a certain time, and a lot of switches will invalidate the information they have on a specific port if things are unplugged from it. So when you actually change it, it will actually rebroadcast out onto the switch ports and relearn the topology of the network whenever you move things around on the switch. Yep.
So a hub works on the physical layer, switch on the data link layer, and a router on the network layer, is that right?
That is effectively correct, yes.
And hubs that's something to bear in mind for
example. Yeah, that's in your test. Yes, hubs work at the physical layer, switches work at the data link layer, and routers work at the network layer of the OSI reference model. Please do not throw sausage pizza away.
One question here, how the switch is in data link layer? I think it should be in the physical layer, right?
No, the switch knows about MAC addresses, therefore it is in the data link layer. No, Philip, you can download the recording. Okie dokies. And if you are listening to these lectures and you're using WinAMP, there's a nifty way of setting up global hotkeys, which I can post an article on that I got from Anthony last year, and it will allow you to pause and resume the lectures while you're taking wonderful notes on our lecture, and that may be useful for some people. It's a bit tricky to set up, but once it's set up, it's quite worthwhile. So, just one more revision. A hub works on the physical layer, a switch works on the data link layer, and a router works on the network layer. Okay, now we have to define a couple of terms. Simplex. That is where. Can anybody tell me what simplex is, actually, just so I don't have to bother defining it? Does anybody know? Thank you, Glenn. We'll see if anybody on Ventrilo can tell me. Data travels in one direction only, and one is the transmitter, and the other is always the receiver. Okay, how about half duplex? I can hear you, though. Yeah, I can hear your answers. I'm just saying if anybody else on Ventrilo knows. You're absolutely right. Yeah, it's part of being blind. They've scientifically proven that we hear better. Isn't that wonderful? Half duplex. Anybody on Ventrilo, Tom? In one direction? Gemma, do you know what half duplex is?
Data travels only in one direction at once.
It does. It travels in one direction at once. And then it can travel in the other direction, but it cannot travel in both directions simultaneously. Can anybody tell me what full duplex is?
That's where data can travel in both directions at the same time.
Yes, it's where data travels in both directions at the same time. You will need to know what simplex, half duplex, and full duplex are. Simplex, one is the transmitter, one is the receiver. This does not change. Half duplex, data travels in one direction at a time, and it can travel in either direction. However, there is often a turnaround delay. Full duplex, data travels in both directions simultaneously. Okay, and an example of half duplex would be a CB radio or a speakerphone.
I have data travelling in both directions at one time.
Okie dokies.
So simplex would be like a radio broadcast.
Yes, it would. It would be like a radio broadcast. I was actually just about to say simplex is a bit like when your wife is giving you a lecture, because the yes dears are somewhat, you know, redundant. You just sort of sit there and go, yes dear, and then you just keeps streaming on. Gemma doesn't do that, though. Okay, they're talking about wireless networking and stuff here. We're talking about infrared networking, which has to be line of sight. And one of my friends actually got his laptop, which had... no, mobile phones are not full duplex. But that's all right. You can't transmit and receive at the same time on the same frequency. It doesn't happen. One of my friends was sitting in a classroom and he had an infrared transmitter receiver or transceiver on his laptop, and there was an infrared printer in the room, and just to prove that the infrared printer was actually making itself available, he printed out a sheet of paper which said, "Help, help, help, I'm trapped in this laser printer." and that actually got the teacher to turn off the infrared transmitter receiver in the printer and to stop people from printing silly pieces of paper like that to the printer. Okay, radio signals. Yes. Radio signals, limited range, obviously walls and things stop them. And single radio frequencies are subject to interference. Just ask Gemma when she's trying to listen to the footy. Okay.
What was that, dear?
I said just ask Gemma about interference when she's trying to listen to the footy or sports talk.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, dear.
Okay, spread spectrum allows you to... What does it do? It allows you... It uses multiple frequencies to actually decrease the immunity to noise and stuff. So it basically jumps around constructively all over the band and avoids those sorts of noise problems. Can anybody give me an example of a common home device that causes absolute havoc with wireless networks? And no, the answer I want is not microwave.
Cordless phone.
Yes, 2.4 gigahertz cordless phone. That's the same.
Oh, that little Foxtel TV box I got that transmits my signal from one end of the house to the other.
Ah, yes, they can make a mess of wireless networks, those AV transceiver things, AV sender receivers you get nice and cheap from JCar, and everything runs on 2.4 gigahertz and it wipes out everything else.
They're the ones. Goodbye, wireless LAN, when I switch that on, which is why I now never use it.
My paranoid father in his tinfoil hat.
I reckon you should wrap your whole father in tinfoil.
Build a Faraday cage.
And then microwave him.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Okay, and the reason we're using spread spectrum is because you can theoretically run more than one wireless network at a time on the one channel. So if you wind up in a particularly busy neighbourhood, you'll have default, and you'll have D-Link, and you'll have Netgear, and you'll have WLAN-app, and all of the favourite default wireless networks with no security on them, and you can pick which one you're going to jump on.
You wouldn't do that, would you, Kerry?
No, I wouldn't, because that would be illegal, and I would not condone any of our class from jumping onto unsecured wireless networks, because it's illegal. And they can also track you down if they can be bothered. They can see what the MAC address is, and then using a, they can actually track down where your laptop is and find you. And you will not be very popular. Okie dokie. I think that's enough for today. Everybody had enough?
Time for a swim now.
Alright, do you want to hit stop